Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the Post's newsroom to life on stage.
House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer joins the Post to discuss immigration reform, the infrastructure bill, and his legislative goals for 2021. Let's listen.
Good morning. I'm Karen Tumulty, and I'm a columnist here at the Washington Post. I write about politics, and I want to welcome you to Washington Post Live, where our guest this morning is one of the most powerful people in Washington, House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer. Welcome, Leader Hoyer.
Good morning, Karen. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you here. And before we get down to talking about your own agenda on the Democratic side, which is certainly more than full these days, I wanted to ask you about a drama that is in the news, playing out on the other side, which is this effort to oust Liz Cheney from the Republican leadership. It really wasn't that long ago when she was being spoken of as being on deck to potentially become the second female speaker in U.S. history. What do you make of what is going on the Republican side, and how does this affect your own ability to do your job leading a pretty slim Democratic majority in the House?
Well, first of all, as you've noticed, Karen, and I think the American public has noticed, we may have a slim majority, but it is a united majority. So we have been very successful during this first quarter and passed a lot of very substantive legislation that is supported by a large majority of the American people. I think Liz Cheney's greatest offense, apparently, is she is principled and she believes in the truth. She is obviously a very conservative Republican from the state of Wyoming. So it's not a question of ideology. It's a question of cult. It's a question of cult of personality, that if you're not 1,000% for Donald Trump, somehow you are not a good Republican. You're not worthy of being in the leadership. I think it's a real weakness in the Republican Party that they have jettisoned their principles, jettisoned adherence to the truth, and simply pandered to one individual, Donald Trump, who I would suggest was a terrible U.S. president, who had no respect for the truth, lied on a regular basis, was impulsive in his actions without a plan. It is a shame that the party has fallen to the place where a Liz Cheney, as I said, principled, committed to the truth, and a conservative Republican is somehow not accepted as a leader in the Republican Party.
So, as I said, your plate is more than full. You've got between President Biden's his infrastructure package, and then the American Families Plan that he unveiled last week in his big speech, you're talking about, you know, $4 trillion or thereabouts in initiatives. Is there anything at all that even resembles bipartisan negotiations going on in the House? We're seeing at least some movement in that direction in the Senate. Are the Republicans engaging you at all on any of this?
Karen, if you're talking about me on the House side, very, very little. We want to proceed in a bipartisan fashion, frankly, because that's good for the country. It's good for us. It's good for the substance of the programs we adopt. But as you saw in dealing with the American Rescue Plan, that we've had very, very substantial support of the American people. Not a single Republican in the House or the Senate voted for it. So they didn't show much interest in bipartisanship, either in discussion or in voting. But the president clearly has been throughout his career, somebody who wanted to seek common ground and did, in fact, many times achieve common ground on legislation. And he still wants to do that. He's still talking to Republicans. The Republicans have clearly indicated they are for infrastructure. Now, they have a more limited view of what infrastructure is. I think the president's view is a broader view, and it's a view that we reflected last year when we passed an infrastructure bill of $1.5 trillion. And one thing that I think may be of interest to you, Karen, and to your listeners is the Democratic leadership had a meeting with Donald Trump in the early spring of 2020 talking about infrastructure. He had put down a program of $250 million. We had discussed $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion. And Donald Trump at that meeting said, no, that's not enough. We need to do $2 trillion. So this is not a figure that is unusual. And it was Donald Trump's figure. The problem is he didn't send a bill down to do that. He didn't say how to pay for it, as Joe Biden has said. But there is certainly a basis, I think, for bipartisan agreement based upon, number one, the Republicans' statements that they're for infrastructure investment, and Donald Trump's articulating a $2 trillion figure. So I'm hopeful that we will continue to try to get bipartisan agreement on an infrastructure bill. Badly needed in our country. As Joe Biden said in his address to the Congress of the United States, this is not for 1 year or 2 years or 5 years or a 10-year plan. This is a generational investment to build back better and to make sure that America is competitive in the 21st century.
Well, one of the ways it's being talked about to potentially get this infrastructure bill over the finish line is potentially to break it into smaller pieces. And at a Washington Post Live event last week, another member of the House leadership, Jim Clyburn, signaled he might be open to that. How do you feel about that? Is that a likely way to get this done?
Karen, it's a possible way of getting it done. It's an alternative. It's not off the table. Clearly, we want to get all of what the president has proposed. We think it's an integrated package that reflects the needs of the country. And recent polls, I think Politico has a poll that shows that some 55% of Americans are supportive of the entire package that has been proposed by the president. But are we open to discussing ways and means to get that done? Of course we are. And I agree with Jim Clyburn, and the speaker has indicated that as well. And the president has indicated that as he's talked to Republicans about possibilities. But what he doesn't want to do is break up one part of it and not proceed with the other parts of the bill, because he believes it's an integrated package, each investment in effect supporting and strengthening its other proposals.
Well, you know the rhythms of Congress as well as any human being in Washington does. Certainly the rescue package had to pass very, very quickly, which was right. One of the reasons. Again, it was pushed through with only Democratic votes. Could you sort of give us a sense of what you think the timeline looks like? How much time do you guys have to get this stuff through before we are into the midterm seasons or whatever else is likely to get in the way?
Well, unfortunately, Karen, it seems to me, my recent experience has been that on the first day of the first of the succeeding Congress, of the 117th Congress, we seem to be in the election mode already. I think that's unfortunate. But when you ask for a time frame, we don't have a definite time frame. Sooner is better than later. The investments being made sooner will be effective sooner. That's good for the American people. It's good for our economy. It's good for the creation of jobs. And it's good for kids who are in school, whether it's college or whether it's pre-K, as the president has indicated. So sooner is better than later. However, having said that, Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury, when she talked to us, she said, it's not so much how soon it's done, it's the fact that it's done right. But we have a number of options available to us. Reconciliation is one. And by the way, when we passed the American Rescue Plan, it seemed to be quick. But as you know, we passed two major pieces of legislation, one in May and one October 1, called HEROES. And so much of what was in that rescue plan was in that bill. So when you say it was passed quickly, it was in a certain sense, but in another sense, it's something that we had worked on for more than half a year.
So what about, what else? I mean, these are some huge, huge items that really and truly people are comparing them in their ambition to LBJ's Great Society or, you know, FDR's New Deal. What right. else is on Steny Hoyer's agenda as in terms of just things you definitely want to get passed and into law in this session?
Well, one thing we need to do, must do, is we need to look at January 6th very, very closely to see how it happened, why it happened, who was responsible. And we need to focus on January 6th, not be as some Republicans are suggesting, look at almost every disturbance that may have happened or demonstration that may have happened in America. January 6th was a unique and terrible event in the history of our country. American citizens pursuing insurrection at the instance of the President of the United States to stop democracy from working. So we need to find out exactly what happened there. Secondly, or contemporaneously, we need to make sure that the Capitol is secure and that it cannot be breached again by a violent mob trying to stop the work of the Congress of the United States in pursuing our democratic principles. So those two certainly we want to pursue. We want to pursue them in the short term, in my view. I don't mean that it would be completed in the short term, but we need to pursue those. In addition, we have the regular legislation that needs to be passed. We need to pass appropriation bills to fund the government. We need to pass the National Defense Authorization Act to ensure the security of our nation. We want to deal with a comprehensive immigration program. Obviously, our immigration system is not working. Everybody agrees on that. There's no partisan disagreement that the immigration system is fine as it is. So we need to pursue that legislation. As you point out, we want to pursue the jobs plan. We want to pursue the family plan. We both believe, we believe very strongly that that will make a real difference for our country. And there are a number of other pieces that of legislation we want to go, but we've sent over this last 3 months, 3.5 months, some very substantive legislation to the United States Senate. H.R. 1, a major political reform bill that deals with dark money. It deals with redistricting, fair redistricting for the people, and it deals with voting rights reform and the assurance that every American has the right to vote, is facilitated in casting their vote, and is not made more difficult to vote. We want everybody to vote, and we want to facilitate that. And sadly, we see Republicans, wherever they're in charge throughout the country, trying to undermine the ability of citizens to vote. We just saw a very sad thing. Alcee Hastings, a wonderful member of the Congress of the United States, died just a few weeks ago. DeSantis, a Trump acolyte, governor of the state of Florida, has set the election, the primary in November, and the general in January, which means he will leave that seat vacant and those folks unrepresented. Not only will they not be able to vote, but they won't have a vote in the Congress of the United States for some 7 months. So sad. And I was perhaps not surprised, but deeply disappointed that they did that. And we, you know, we passed an Equality Act. We want to see that passed. We dream and promise. 85% of the American people think Dreamers who came here as children, who've gone to school here, worked here, served in our armed forces, served as nurses and teachers and doctors, they ought not to be sent to a land that they do not know. This is their home. Overwhelming support, comprehensive background checks. 80 to 90% of the American people support that. McConnell would not put it on the floor. We've sent it over again. the House, the Senate ought to pass that bill. So there are a number of pieces of legislation beyond the two major pieces of which is the jobs plan and the family plan that we have to deal with and will deal with.
Well, while we've been speaking here, there's been a bit of breaking news that I, in fact, am going to have to read to you off my phone, if you don't mind that. The Facebook Oversight Board has upheld Facebook's decision to suspend Donald Trump from Facebook and Instagram, saying that Trump's posts during the riots at the Capitol that you were just discussing violated Facebook's rules. You know, the Facebook Oversight Board had upheld the ban on Trump, but it had initially been critical of how that decision was made. What is your reaction to that? And what is the fallout likely to be on Capitol Hill, where there is a lot of discussion about the degree to which the government should regulate or not regulate these tech giants?
Well, I think clearly the impact of social media and the actions of the tech companies that have so much role in the communications that occur in our country, we're going to look at that closely. As the ads that have been running say, it was a long time ago that these folks came on board. And we had regulations, and those regulations are now outdated and need to be reviewed. And as you know, there's a lot of interest on Capitol Hill for doing that. As far as the decision of Facebook goes, I applaud that decision. Facebook is not the public square. We need to remember that they're a private company. Like the Washington Post. The Washington Post, just because somebody wants to have a full page ad in there, The Post does not have to accept that. They're a private company. They're not the public square. The First Amendment guarantees the president and anybody else, President Trump and anybody else, the right to say what they want and the right to purvey that as they want. I understand the president now has a blog that he's proposing. He had apparently a bigger proposal at one point in time and maybe couldn't get support for that. But in any event, Facebook is saying we are not going to be an organ through which somebody who incited an insurrection, as Liz Cheney clearly pointed out, that's her problem. She told the truth, and the Republicans do not like the truth. And as a matter of fact, Trump rarely speaks the truth. And so they've made a determination that they don't want to be an avenue to convey that through their medium. And I think they have the right to do that. And I applaud them for that action.
So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the midterm elections. As you pointed out earlier, it felt like we were already into a midterm election season, roughly noon on January 20th. You've got, as we discussed, a slim majority. You know, only twice since the Civil War has the president's party not lost seats in the first midterm election following his inauguration. You are dealing with state legislatures across the country, Republican legislatures, looking at more restrictive voting laws. You're looking at reapportionment. How are you feeling about this midterm election season?
I think it's going to be challenging, but I'm not down. I'm optimistic, Karen, and I don't think I'm Pollyannish. As you say, I've been around for a long period of time, and I've been through a lot of election cycles myself. First of all, there are a couple of exceptions to that rule you talked about, and that's when the country was facing deep economic downturns. That was true in 32 and true recently. I think that we are not in normal historic times. We're in very different times. The American people, in my view, went to the polls. They rejected Donald Trump handily. And one of the reasons so many people came out, obviously Donald Trump motivated people both negatively and positively. A lot of people voted for him as well, but over 80 million people, more than any other president in history, voted for Joe Biden. And I think he's got his finger on the pulse of America. The polls reflect that in his investments. I think we're going to pass legislation that is supported by the American people. And I think Chuck Schumer ought to put it forward. And if the Republicans vote against it, they're going to have to answer for opposing the American people. McConnell refused, as I said, to put comprehensive background checks on the floor of the United States Senate in the last Congress. Overwhelmingly, 85 to 90% of the American people, including the majority of Republicans, thought that was good legislation. So I'm not as pessimistic as some. I think we can pick up seats in the House of Representatives. Donald Trump, I don't think is going to be on the ballot. He should not be on the ballot. I frankly think Donald Trump ought to be facing legal challenges in terms of incitement of insurrection in our country. But having said that, Donald Trump brought out a lot of people. And yes, we have challenges. Yes, the Republicans control a lot of the state legislators. Yes, they're going to try to, in effect, disenfranchise Democrats by their redistricting shenanigans. And yes, we have a close number in the majority right now in the House of Representatives. But I think we're going to pick up seats. We had great candidates around the country, some lost by very close margins with Donald Trump on the ballot. He's not going to be. I don't think he's going to bring out those kinds of votes. And I think what is happening within the Republican Party is a now deeply divided party. If they jettison Liz Cheney, who is, as I said, a solid, mainstream, very conservative Republican who speaks the truth, Mitt Romney has the same problem. He was booed by his party because he spoke the truth. He saw the facts and he acted on what he thought his principles demanded. If the Republican Party rejects that, I think the American people are going to reject them. So I think we're going to be in good shape, maybe Pollyannish, but we're going to be in decent shape to maintain and expand our majorities in the Senate and the House.
Well, does it worry you, though, that some of your moderate members, that the moderate Democrats who were able to hold on to swing districts for the party, are beginning, some of them are looking at the exits? We saw Sherry Bustos, for instance, announce her retirement this week. It's just hard to imagine another Democrat who's capable of hanging on to that district. Connor Lamb, who was just a breakout star, is looking at running for the Senate. Is this of concern to you? And will you be able to recruit strong candidates in some of these districts if the members who are the incumbents there decide either to leave or to run for a different office?
The answer is yes. Connor Lamb is terrific. Sherry Bustos is terrific. Frankly, as you know, we picked up a lot of seats in Pennsylvania. The redistricting that the Republicans did in Pennsylvania was overturned. We had fair redistricting in Pennsylvania, and we picked up five net seats, four in Philadelphia and Connor Lamb in the Philadelphia metropolitan area. So I think, Karen, that we're going to do fine. We have a very energetic, smart, hard-charging chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and Sean Patrick Maloney. He comes from a swing district in New York. He knows about swing districts. I think he'll be a great recruiter. Nancy and I and Jim Clyburn spend a lot of time recruiting as well. We have a great recruiting team in place. And I think you'd be surprised when you talk to people around the country, particularly people who are thinking about running for office and have got a lot of ability and talent. They're angry about what these Republicans are doing. They're angry about the divisions that Trump sowed in America and the insurrectionist that assaulted our democracy. And they're angry about the people who continue to lie about whether or not there was a fair election and whether or not Joe Biden was really elected president. Of course he was. That's what Liz Cheney is guilty of saying. Liz Cheney is guilty of saying what every court that considered these cases said, that there was no evidence. It's what the Attorney General of the United States under Donald Trump said. There was no substantive evidence that there was a fraud that affected the outcome of the election. So In that context, I think we have a lot of energized people around this country who want to, you know, they're mad as hell and they're opening the window and they want to come to Congress. So I think we're going to recruit really good people. In Illinois, of course, as you know, Illinois lost a seat, but we control the governorship, the House and the Senate and redistricting. So Sherry's district may be a little better, not worse than it was when she won. And she won initially, you know, it was a Republican district and she won that district initially. We can do that again.
So I wanted to ask you about some comments that James Carville, longtime Democratic strategist, made this week that got a little attention. You can see where I'm going here. He basically said that wokeness is becoming a serious problem and that large parts of the country view Democrats as, quote, an urban, coastal, arrogant party, which could be something that could cost the Democrats' control of Congress next year. Is there anything to that?
Well, of course, as I've said, Karen, a number of times now, the legislation we have passed has the support of the American people. Joe Biden, I don't think, fits any of those definitions. Yes, he's Eastern, he's Delaware and Scranton, PA, but he's a down-to-earth guy that gets it, that showed. I thought his speech to the Congress of the United States showed exactly the kind of movement and investment and priorities that the American people have. And he showed a great empathy for the plight of working people in this country. And he wants to make sure that they, and this is my agenda, the Make It in America agenda, they want to make it. They want to feel that they can support themselves and their family and their kids can get to school and they can stay healthy. Joe Biden has reflected the empathy of understanding their fears and their aspirations and the challenges that they face. And I think in that context, frankly, I think the Democratic Party is going to do very well. And we're going to do well in the Midwest. Because Joe Biden's jobs bill is going to create a lot of jobs in the Midwest. Joe Biden says we need to make things in America. I've had that agenda for the last decade about making it in America. So, Karen, I think that we're going to resonate with the American people as Joe Biden did in this last election.
But Mr. Hoyer, part of what Carville was talking about was the language that Democrats use. And I think he was suggesting that they need to do a better job of speaking the way President Biden does, in sort of relating to people using language that they themselves use among them, you know, themselves, and not, as Carville put it, in the faculty lounge. Do you think there's any validity to that?
Karen, what I thought I answered was that I think Joe Biden is speaking exactly as Carville would want him to speak. And I haven't talked to Jim about it, but to see what he thought about Biden's speech. But I thought, I mean, Biden's the head of our party, just as Trump was the head of the Republican Party. And apparently, unfortunately and sadly and confoundingly still seems to be. You know, people are going to listen to Joe Biden and they're going to respond to that. I think Democrats are talking in the language of making sure that people can make it in America, can have a quality of life, and can be confident their kids are going to have a good education and can have opportunities in the future. So I think we're talking their language. I think the Republicans are what I call, they have a yo-yo message, in effect. Yo-yo standing for you're on your own. That's why they voted against the rescue plan. And they told people you're on your own. That's why they voted against VAWA, the violence against women. You're on your own. That's why they voted against minimum wage. You're on your own. They voted against overwhelmingly against Sandy relief when we had Superstorm Sandy in the Northeast and 58 million people were at risk. They said, no, we're not going to support helping you. You're on your own. I think there's a real difference between the two parties, more than I've ever seen in my over 50 years of active involvement in public life. I think the Republican Party is a party of no, And we're Joe Biden speaks the party of empathy, involvement, and effective investment. So, you know, I think Carville's right in one sense. We can't talk about people. We can't talk jargon. We got to talk. Look, your kids need to go to school. Your family needs to be healthy, and you need a good paying job to support your kids. And you need childcare for that. You need some help if you're at the lower end of the economic scale with the earned income tax credit and child tax credit. So I think we're speaking to the needs of America, of the American people and American families. And I think that will resonate. And I think that's why we're going to be successful in the future.
Well, thank you so much. We're out of time, Mr. Leader, but that sounds like a pretty good note to end on today. So thank you so much for being with us. And we hope that you'll be back here at Washington Post Live soon.
Karen, I look forward to it. And I want to say, I so respect the work you have done and the awards you have received for the extraordinary insights you have related to the American people. Thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for joining us today at Washington Post Live. Please stay tuned for our next program. It's at noon today. My colleague, Heather Long, will interview the Executive Vice Chair of MasterCard, Ann Cairns, about pushing for gender diversity. And you can always head to WashingtonPostLive.com and see what else we have coming up. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. To hear more interviews from this series and other Washington Post Live programs, visit us at WashingtonPostLive.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.